Welcome to the Check Your Head podcast, the podcast where notable musicians and experts share their stories and solutions for mental health and wellness. I'm your host, Mari Fong, a music journalist and life coach for musicians, and this month we're celebrating our Check Your Head superheroes, those who have found their solutions for mood disorders and addictions, as well as those who have supported and encouraged others during their mental health journeys. Because September is National Recovery Month, where we celebrate those who choose to self-improve, those who choose to make self-care a priority, and those who have experienced the depths of life and chose to instead fight with hope and hard work to get to a better, more joyous life. In September, we also celebrate those who have survived and thrived after a suicide attempt, along with those who have had suicidal thoughts but chose recovery instead, and even chose to help others along the way. Our featured musical guest is a perfect example of this. A country music star who seemed to be on top of the world in 2014 when he debuted his single, Take It On Back, followed by another big hit called Little Bit of You, with both singles landing on Billboard's top 10 country charts. What followed for this artist was skyrocketing fame and touring with the likes of country singer-songwriters like Brantley Gilbert and playing mega shows with stars like Tim McGraw. Our musical guest today is Chase Bryant, who grew up with anxiety and depression that finally crushed him when fame became too heavy of a load. Chase shares his story behind his suicide attempt, his mental health solutions for recovery, along with his new single Upbringing, which is also the name of his new album. Stay tuned to listen to a clip of Upbringing at the end of our episode. Next, we have an expert who has been instrumental in one of my favorite nonprofits for the music industry, Eric Steinberg, Executive Vice President at Sweet Relief Musicians Fund. Eric will share Sweet Relief's impact on helping musicians during the pandemic and how they've been helping musicians for the past 27 years. The Check Your Head podcast is a proud partner with Sweet Relief to raise awareness and funds for mental health, with Sweet Relief providing assistance to anyone who makes their living in the music industry during tough financial times. But first, let's hear country singer-songwriter Chase Bryant share his story.
You had a couple singles that did really well at the start of your career, which was Take It Back and A Little Bit of You. And as you rose to fame, sometimes that transition could be difficult and sometimes it could be enjoyable. How was that for you?
Miserable. I mean, there were days that were good, but I was making poor decisions and drinking too much. I mean, it was just textbook things, you know. I got caught up in it for a minute, and then I realized how much I didn't like it. And it's like I couldn't get myself out of it because that's who I wanted to be at the time, I thought. And that was a miserable escape.
You know, I was reading about something called imposter syndrome. I don't know if you've heard of that, but it happens sometimes to musicians where they feel almost like a fraud. There's a lot of self-doubt and feelings like someone's going to find out that this is not who I really am. Did right. you ever feel like that?
I feel like in a way we all are. I mean, we all come from a place that we were different from somebody else. And then we go on stage and all of a sudden we're just this hero, you know? Definitely, yeah, I felt it at the maximum level. It's miserable. You're putting on a cape, trying to be the superhero. You know, people need to realize you're just a normal person. I mean, people say, well, you're not normal, you're a rock star. Well, what is that? What good does it do? Do you one day have a tombstone that says, I don't want mine to read Chase Bryant, rock star. I want mine to read Chase Bryant, great husband, great dad, great friend, great brother, great son, loving, caring, not rock star. It's incredible how things sort of change when you get everything you want.
Well, I'm thinking about all the people around you and how that was kind of enabling for you, whether it was what they were telling you or the things they were giving you. I mean, did you feel that was part of it also?
Yeah, I think you surround yourself with people that also tell you, oh, you're the greatest thing in the world, and then it starts failing and you wonder why. You feel like that one car that came out with a bad radiator or something, you know what I mean? It worked for a while and it was awesome. Then all of a sudden it just died. You know, I was thinking this morning, how many people we surround ourselves with every day and how different each person is. Like, think about the person you have to be for your family, the person that you are for your friends, and how many different friends, some that like to drink, some that don't, some that like to go to the movies, you know, and don't want to go out, and some that are older, younger. We're always wearing a different module that fits into, like, you know, I've just started thinking about that and how much I need to really be more selective as to what I give my time to, because your time is incredibly important. And if you waste it, it can waste you, you know?
Right. The other thing too is that fans or people around you that said, no, you're a rock star, they have a self-image of you that they're putting on you. But then you have a self-image of yourself inside you that is not matching what these people are saying. And there was a time after those hits that you put out singles that didn't exactly reach the heights of the first singles. And that was also, you know, distressing. Can you tell me how you felt during that time?
People that I surrounded myself with and told me how great I was and called me and asked about my parents and everything else, still at the end of the day, got mad when something didn't work because I didn't make them any money. They don't call you like they used to anymore. They don't text. There's no group text. I mean, I can name a number of them, and I still call them to this day just to see if they'll get back on a healthy routine of calling me, just because it's like a little nudge to me where it's like, you did everything you could. You know, I don't want to die one day a bad guy. I did a lot of bad things in my life. I'm not saying bad things as in, oh, I've done something illegal or whatever. I was always scared of jail, so I never did that stuff. But what I did do was I didn't treat everybody the way that everybody should be treated, which would be the way that I want to be treated. And when you're having hits and you're eating, you know, caviar in some of the finest restaurants in the world, and you're flying all over the world playing these shows, it just wasn't correct. I was just dying for this kid in me to get out. I was like, why won't they love him? Why do I have to do this? Why do I have to dress a certain way? Why can't they just like me? Because I wasn't letting them see it. I never really went to the label and said, this isn't me. They never really knew. Nobody knew because I was hiding it. I was very good at it. There were a lot of things nobody ever knew. And I was keeping in a shell because I was too afraid that if the real me came out, what if they didn't like it? Then what?
I mean, there are people that will treat you differently due to money and fame. So that could be really confusing. But at the time, who was that Chase Bryant that was trying to get out? How would you describe that person?
And you're looking at him. One thing that never changed, I was so into making the show the best thing that there was. I mean, I wanted to go out every night and be the best no matter what it was. And then I got on stage and all I started thinking was shiny suits and I'm the man. And if I was sitting here playing guitar, I could feel like I'm the best guitar player when I'm in the studio or I'm at home. And then when I go out live, it's just kind of like, eh. It's okay. I mean, there's part of me on stage that was real, but I think it was because it was the songs. Something wasn't connecting. And I was talking to those guys and they were like, man, you're always mad. Like if one thing went downhill, I mean, I was riding somebody, you know, and I was yelling or screaming at somebody. But sometimes I didn't pay attention as best I should have because I was too caught up in what, where we were going to go drink after the show or what were we going to do? Stacking alcohol on top of anxiety was not a good move. Because then you start getting a little more honest with yourself and you start seeing the chain that's unraveling, you know? It's wild.
Well, it sounds like you became a person that you really didn't like.
When you say that, I think like I've overcome so much and I have tried to get so far away with that guy. I don't even remember what life was because that was such a dark time in my life that I don't want to know him. I don't want to recall him. And I enjoy talking about the past because I don't sit here and dwell on it too much. But you start realizing when you have more better days than bad days, you kind of escape that. You know, we're over here now. We're basking now.
I know that you have a much better life and there's been a road to recovery. It takes time to really get to a point where you could talk about, you know, your suicide attempt. And I can kind of understand where you hated that person so much that you just wanted to destroy it. And you didn't know how to get the real you back.
Yeah. I woke up every day wondering how it was going to end. I just like, this is it. I'm done. If this isn't going to end, if this pain and misery isn't going to end, then I'm going to end. Maybe that was God or some higher power saying, okay, well then change it. Because I was begging for forgiveness. I was shouting sorry as loud as I could. I was asking God for help. Nobody will ever know the kind of pain that I felt when I'm screaming at the top of my lungs saying I'm sorry and feeling a cold barrel of a 357 revolver in your mouth and you were chewing on it. And no matter how hard you bite down, you're not going to break that barrel. That barrel's going to break you. There was nothing that could overpower me at that time. You could have sent King Kong my way, and I promise you, I could have whipped him just because my adrenaline was just next level. And I began to shake, and it was just, I'm sorry, and then boom, pull the trigger.
Do you remember putting 6 bullets in the gun?
I recall there being 6 bullets in the gun when I took them apart and put them in. But as frantic as I was leaving that house, I may have just got lucky enough to pull the one slot that didn't have a bullet in it because I was shaking and mad. And I mean, I recall putting 6 in it, but I don't know. I can't answer that question because that's the miracle. I don't know. But I recall putting 6. That's the way I recall it. But I remember the gun not firing and then waking up and going, oh my God. And then opening my eyes. And I was in the same spot I was sitting in when it happened.
After that, there were thoughts in your head that life is too short. Don't make it shorter. Did you feel that that was you speaking to yourself, or did you feel like that was God speaking to you, or the universe?
I've never known where that came from. Life is a whole lot more than any record or any show or any award or anything I could ever do. The most important part in my life was to get myself okay, because I wanted to be a dad like my dad was to me. I wanted to be a best friend like my mom and my brother was to me. And I wanted to be a great husband and a caring father and best friend. When I think about that night, the pictures are so vivid, I can still see it. And I still have a hard time with it, because I shouldn't have ever let it get there, but I can't regret that moment of my life because that's why I'm here. And now I have to use it to help others, to realize that no matter how bad it gets, we're all hopeful for a better day. And we're the people that are in control of that. Nobody else is in control of that. I mean, when you're down that low, we all think, well, somebody or something will fix it. But quite frankly, we're in control of that. We have to fix it. We have to take the time. We have to have the will to fix it. And for me, being a man, it is not easy to say, I have a problem, or I have something that I need to get fixed. And it's not easy to say in a band with 4 guys and a bus driver and a merch person and a tour manager and a management team when you're the one paying for their kids to go to school. That was hard. And that's why it took me so many years, because I didn't want to let anybody down. But I don't think I let anybody down. I think I let myself down for a long, long time.
I know that there was a message that you had to your family before your suicide attempt. Can you give me an idea of what the message was about?
Yeah, the theme was purely to say that I was sorry and how thankful I was for a lot of people, and to understand that that wasn't a selfish act. I get the part of where it might be selfish, because yes, you are leaving a family who will have to deal with it for the rest of their life. yes, there is a part of it that is selfish, but it's not an act of selfishness. It's an act of hurt and pain and sorrow and misery. So I just said how thankful I was and how grateful I was for the people that were good to me. Sometimes there's just more bad people out there to you than there are good people. You know, that was a lot of different things. It was a lot of people. It was a lot of years of these things happening to me that I was just tired of. And I've reached out to a lot of those people who made me feel a lot of the ways that I did. I forgave everything and everybody, and I forgave myself. I mean, that was key for me.
After that attempt, you went to the hospital, went through recovery. What was that road of recovery for you?
Well, there were parts of it that were miserable. When I first stepped foot in the hospital, when I got behind the door, I tried to leave when I got there because I was scared. It hit me. It's like, okay, you're not getting out, because well, I was told I wasn't getting out. You know, I thought, okay, well, maybe I'll just go to therapy or something. No, it doesn't work that way. Thankfully, I wasn't there that long. I mean, they had seen a big progression in me and knew that I wanted help through therapy. And I think the parts that were miserable were, look, it isn't fun being told you're wrong. You know, I mean, it's not. But when you finally start understanding, that's okay. I can be wrong now. That's all right. I'll be wrong. I can own up to that. And I can grow from that. See, that's the key to me, is the growth, you know? And then everything else started making sense, you know? Digging years and years back and talking about things was a good thing for me. Music was a good thing for me. Not surrounding myself with bad people.
Well, it does sound like you've done therapy. Have you ever tried anything like medication or any other kinds of specific therapies that really helped you?
I was on medication when I was younger, on and off, like both depression and anxiety. But I realized, just slow down, take a deep breath. But I just feel like there are people that are falsely medicated.
Well, I agree. I feel whether it's doctors or psychiatrists may not be taking the time to really find out what the root of the problem is, or if it's something chemical, it can be. But there's always a trial and error that happens. What did you find that you feel was the root of it? And what do you do now on a daily basis for your mental health?
I've had worked with a therapist for a really good while that seemed to react to what I had like a PTSD. Hmm. My memory, I don't forget anything. I can recall things. And I had to learn to let those things go. My everyday regimen is try to get myself in a schedule. What I tried to do every day is to try to get myself up at the same time and get myself down at the same time. Try to eat good. I love good greasy cheese enchiladas. I will crush a buffet any day of the week, but I try to make sure that my body intakes what's good for me as much as I can. And I try to stay on top of things like that, because I do feel like you start to get in a rhythm. You know what I mean? It's like you can't really be beaten that way. And then I try to realize if I'm getting upset or my anxiety is just ruling my body, I try to get right something that I feel like, how do I slow down? What do I do? Do I get on my mower and just cut my grass and relax for a minute? I mean, last week I cut my grass 3 times, if that tells you anything. So I just try to get in a rhythm with things. You know, I try to stay focused on music. I try to stay focused on my family, my friends. And I try not to spread myself too thin.
Well, I think that's really important, because being a creative person, sometimes we get so passionate about our creativity that we can continue without taking breaks or stay up till the wee hours of the morning. And that's not healthy. To even schedule breaks throughout the day. And also, as a creative person, we normally don't like routines. But I've also come to realize that routines are so important to keep you on top of things. And I really love the fact that you said you wake up at a certain time in the morning and you go to sleep at night, because what you're doing is honoring your sleep. Honoring your sleep. And that is such a huge foundation for your mental health. And it's something that a lot of people don't realize how important that is, especially musicians, because on tour, you know, you play the show and then there's the after party. There's people on the tour bus and, you know, there's so much that can interrupt that schedule. So it does take a lot of strength to really keep up that routine.
You nailed it. You know, you get up, you get there, you go do this, you come back, you grab some lunch, you go do something else, you go to sound check, you come back from sound check, then you're freaking out because, oh, this guitar isn't sounding right, so we got to get that right. Shower, hurry up, go do a meet and greet, come back, go do a show, come back, party with everybody. Those days will not be a part of my life anymore. I will wake up when I wake up and do my thing first and then do what's next. I got to be honest, there's one thing that the music industry applauds that I don't agree with. And that is, man, that kid will go out and play 300 shows a year. Boy, we ought to applaud him. You can wreck somebody doing that. I mean, I did that. And I was gone so long that I fell in so much love with the road that when I came home, I resented my house because I wasn't on a bus. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't eat right. I couldn't do anything right. When I came home, I just, heck it, I felt like I'd just sleep all day and stay up all night long. You have to be able to balance those two things because without that balance, it's hard to develop a relationship with anybody. It's hard to stay true to yourself. So now realizing I'm going back out on the road, sure, everybody can have drinks. Sure, everybody can have a glass of wine or do whatever they'd like to do. But I'm not going out there to have some party on my bus. You know what I mean? You got to take that seriously. And I'm there to work and I'm there to have fun playing music, not have fun playing the party guy. Somebody once told me, like, when you go on stage, you put that cape on. And when you come off, you figure out how to take it off and go back to living real life. And there is something to that. You do have to have that guy who can turn that switch on and go be that superhero and then come back and be able to just shut it off. So I'm working on that. I'm trying to figure that part out.
One thing that I noticed when you were talking about the rehearsals, the sound checks, the show, the after party, the whole thing, there's so much adrenaline that happens during that time. And even though the adrenaline might be happy adrenaline and excitement, it's still adrenaline. And when we have that coursing through our bodies 24/7, we're not meant to do that. Adrenaline was meant for back in the primitive days when a cheetah came and jumped out at us, we had to bolt and leave. That's the thing with stress and 300 dates a year. You have ongoing stress and that adrenaline will take you down. Your immunity, your energy, even if you're having a great time. That's the thing that I've come to realize. So how is touring going to be different now that you've realized these things?
Taking time and slowing down a little bit, going to have a glass of coffee at a coffee shop down the road, maybe take a book and read for a little bit and not going to sound check 45 minutes early because I'm always early to everything, like way early. Everybody used to say that. They're like, man, you're the one rock star that's like there before the party even starts. You know, you're like early to your own birthday party. So just slowing down, being at places on time, not being there the day before, and just coasting into things, not necessarily just jumping to conclusions before they arrive.
You know, you mentioned when something would go wrong in the past, you would, you know, get really upset and scream at people, but there's always going to be mistakes. There's always going to be things that happen. Do you look at it differently now?
I've surrounded myself with people now that I can't afford to lose. And by afford, I mean, not by money. I mean, for my own good, for my heart, because I love them too much. My mom and I are very close. My dad and I are extremely close. And sometimes I get mad and I take it out on them. I can't afford to lose, you know, my parents, my brother, his daughters, my nieces, my sister-in-law. You know, we work so well together. You got to really watch things that you say to people because those things can hurt for a very long time. Mm-hmm. I have regained some trust and some love from guys that I played with on the road before that we might have had not seen eye to eye, but I might not have had to handle it the way I handled it. Because when I'm stern about something, I'm very stern. I'm a very stern person. I'm very honest. I think now it's just understanding that if you're hurtful to somebody, you have to look at the consequences. And I don't want to be that guy. I've done and said things in my life that I wish I would have never done or said. I hope that moving forward, I say the things that matter most, and that's to allow people to understand how much I care for them. It's a hell of a feeling inside when you know you've done something wrong or said something wrong. It'll eat you up, and it did me, because I would never sleep without thinking about it.
Sometimes that's the hardest part, is to forgive ourselves for things that we've done, but realizing that others have forgiven us already. And especially when you're trying to be a better person.
You can't change the fact that we're human. I know a lot of people that wear a hat, or they put their hair back, or they do whatever they do. Glasses. People used to ridicule me of like, okay, well, I have very sensitive eyes and I get drowning migraines that'll send you under for days. But those are things I used to take to heart and be like, why do they don't like me? That doesn't mean that. It just means that we're a little bit different. You know, we're humans. It's okay for somebody not to like something. It's okay for somebody to disagree with something. That doesn't mean they don't like it. It just means they might not agree with it. We're human. We make mistakes. We each do something a little different.
So when you look at your life today, what is it that is making you happy?
Having the chance to have this conversation. I mean, this is huge, right? I would have never had the audacity to talk about these things, you know, years ago. They would have frightened me to death. It would have been, I don't want anybody to know that. I'm still a very private person, but it's things like this. It's moments with my family, with my friends. It's having this studio around me where I get to create music every day, the hunting, the fishing, the cutting my grass, just knowing that I'm here. It's knowing that I've had another day to live. I take life very seriously now. It's being able to feel okay with the fact that I made some very life-altering decisions. But look where I am now. Somebody asked me today, they said, what would you tell people that are going through something really hard? And my answer, my honest answer, is to soak it in. Because when you think it can't get any worse, it might. And when you think it won't be any better, it will be. That's the one thing I know. I know that it can be better. As long as you're the driver of your own life, you're going to be okay. It's just understanding that we got to take those moments in so that when we get to another bump in the road and get a flat tire, we'll call somebody to come air it back up. It's not the end of the world. Just let it go. Let it be. And don't dig too far back. Don't be looking at yesterday too much. Live in the moment and understand what that moment has to offer and what you have to offer that moment.
I like that analogy where you said, if you get a flat tire, just call someone to pump it back up. Yeah. Because it shows that we all need help sometimes. And it's okay to ask for help. And there are people around you that would love to show their love and care to you by helping when you need it. It's in the same way where you feel good when you are able to help somebody that you love. So a good analogy there.
Well, thank you.
Next up, we have a leader in one of the most well-loved nonprofits for those in the music industry. Eric Steinberg, Executive Vice President of Development and Artist Relations at Sweet Relief Musicians Fund. Eric will talk about how Sweet Relief's Atabuck program and other ways artists can help raise funds to provide financial assistance to musicians, and how the need is especially important during this pandemic. Eric also shares how easy it is for you to apply for assistance if you're in need and have a career in the music industry. Now let's hear Eric share his knowledge and advice.
I'm excited that the Check Your Head podcast has a partnership with Sweet Relief, because I really admire everything that you all are doing, and you've been doing it for 27 years. Can you give us the story about how the nonprofit began with Victoria Williams?
Thanks, Maury. We're also grateful for our partnership and the good work that you're doing over here at Check Your Head podcast. Yes, Victoria Williams, singer-songwriter, was out on tour with Neil Young, and she began experiencing some movement difficulty in her hands strumming, and it turned out to be symptoms of MS. She was diagnosed with MS. As she began the treatment process, the bills were mounting, as they do, and she was very fortunate to have a lot of friends in the music industry. Neil was one of them. Lou Reed and Lou Reed's wife were one of the drivers. They created this incredible album that Pearl Jam was on it, and a slew of other amazing artists got together, put together a compilation of Victoria Williams songs, and it sold incredibly well and raised more money than she needed. She put the remaining funds aside to help other musicians who might be in that position, overwhelmed by medical bills, who didn't have such fancy friends to make albums for them. And so that's how Sweet Relief Musicians Fund was born. That was in 1993, 94. And, you know, we've been going strong ever since, helping musicians in the music community. We, a few years ago, opened up the fund to include not only career musicians, but also music industry professionals, all those other folks in the industry, the crew, agents, managers, anyone who makes their living in the music industry and finds themselves in that predicament are eligible for help.
Well, I'm really glad you did that, because I feel like with the pandemic, I mean, it put a halt to everything, especially touring. And just thinking about touring in itself, I mean, there's a huge trickle down with the tour crew, the management, you know, publicist. I mean, it affects so many people in the industry that surround the artist. And, you know, I remember you had mentioned that during the pandemic, you had received 10,000 applications for financial assistance. What are some of the things that you've seen or heard about the impact on people in the industry, you know, with this pandemic?
Yeah, it's total devastation. Unprecedented, completely wiping out billions and billions of dollars of an entire industry. It's not just the artists who aren't working. It's everyone who makes that machine move. And that is a lot of people. You know, the public isn't always aware. They're intentionally invisible. You know, they literally wear black clothing as they move around the stage so that they're unseen. And, you know, this the pandemic, I think, really did shine a spotlight on those folks. But it took a little while for that to sink in. I think it was immediately obvious to the public at large that artists were in trouble, and musicians who relied on touring for income, which these days, unless you're Drake or Beyonce, you know, you're relying on touring. So the public was aware of the musician side, but the crew side was a whole nother story. And it was so severe, Mari, we actually were approached by the Rex Foundation. They were founded in honor of a Grateful Dead roadie. So they have a particular affinity for the crew folk, and they wanted to help. They wanted to help that community, and we started a fund with them called the Rex Roadie Fund that specifically focused on helping these behind-the-scenes folks who desperately needed help. And, I mean, these are talented, highly skilled individuals, but immediately ground to a halt, full stop, that's it, the lights are turned off. And all the mental health factors that you have to deal with when such a devastating change occurs, to try to pick up the pieces and move on and feed your family, and the holidays are coming, and you have a mortgage, and you have kids, and you have credit card debt that is now mounting, and student loan, whatever it is, absolutely overwhelming. So the need was tremendous. It is still is tremendous, and the emergency is still in full effect. So we received 10,000 applications like that, and it's well over 15,000 now. We've helped a good portion of them, but we've got a long way to go. The need was exponentially greater, and luckily so was the help that we received. The spotlight really had shined upon the industry, and our reputation served us well in that we know what we're doing. We provide assistance to the music community, and they sure needed it last year and the last 18, 20 months.
What really brought it home to me is I did an interview with Sean Morgan of Seether. And he was talking about the pandemic, and he said, you know, my depression really heightened because there's so much uncertainty. And he was talking about, you know, things that we all think about. He said, Mari, you know, I am trying to figure out how to do schooling with my child on the computer. I'm worried about putting food on the table. I have to pay my bills. And, you know, I'm thinking, you know, see, there's this big band that may not have those concerns, but it doesn't matter. I mean, those concerns go across the board. And, you know, one thing that's different with a pandemic is that we don't know what the end is going to look like. And, you know, with the Delta variant, that was something that was unexpected. And now there are festivals and shows that are closing down because of it. So there's a lot of moving parts to this whole pandemic.
Yeah, for sure. It's a fluid situation and everyone's trying to do their best. And the uncertainty is definitely still there. We're still getting emails from folks who now they're driving Ubers or trying to get Instacart jobs and gig working and doing anything that they can to keep it together, but they're not playing music. There was a gentleman, I spoke to his wife. This is a person in a very successful national, world, globally touring jam band. And she said that he was walking around the house, depressed, unable to adapt until he was finally able to go to a practice session with his bandmates. And he came home from that one practice session, complete turnaround, like he was a new person, she said. And she herself is a mental health care provider. She's a therapist. So she was able to describe this to me very well. And it was incredibly powerful. And artists who make music, they do it because they need to do it. It's like they have to. And that was certainly the case with this jam band guy. Finally, he was able to play with his bandmates and the depression lifted to the extent where it was incredibly noticeable by his family. So you combine all this other uncertainty and then you're isolated from your band and you've had this, your art basically kind of taken away from you. There's nothing like the live music experience. Any performer will tell you that playing to a screen is not the same as playing to a live audience. There's that energy exchange is missing and it becomes a real hole inside. And it's really sad. And,
you know, through the podcast and just as a music journalist, I've learned how much that artist expression through their music and performing is so healing for them, being able to connect those really vulnerable feelings through their lyrics to their fans and how healing it is for their fans to connect with that energy. And also just the feeling behind those lyrics that make them feel like somebody else understands this feeling that's being expressed in the song. So it is definitely this two-way street where the band is energized and fulfilled. And as a fan, I mean, I love going to a live music show. If I go to a show and you got all those people, it's like everybody's on the same page with this energy. And that feeling can last like for a week. Anyways, you're kind of on a natural high.
Yeah.
So one thing that I was really excited about is that you developed this specific mental health fund. Was there anything in particular that encourage you to put that fund together?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything that we've been learning about mental health and the importance of mental health, it was a need in our community that needed to be addressed. And there were some studies that we read that spoke to the real vulnerability of the artist community to mental health troubles. So we wanted to address it, but we thought our role would be best to make the connections and to remove the financial barrier. We pay for stuff. That's what we've done, is provide emergency financial assistance. So we're turning back to the mental health fund as a way to draw attention to this need. And we're establishing and have established a lot of partnerships with a lot of great organizations who provide mental health services specifically to this community, which is very important to us. We had spoken to a number of artists who would say, I went to this person and they just don't understand the things that I have to deal with when I'm on tour and all the intricacies of being an artist. They didn't feel understood by their therapist. So we work with some organizations that specialize in creating networks of therapists who do understand those things, who have special training in the entertainment and music industry. And then that's been a really great tool for us. And so our role is to make the connection and take away that financial barrier. And it's the difference between I'm going to pay rent this month or I'm going to get therapy. So we want to make sure that they get the help they need and aren't blocked by a lack of finances.
I mean, I do feel like when we're really conscious about our mental health, we realize that it's a foundation for our life. I mean, if the mental health is off in any way, it could really affect so many things in our life, other relationships, our career, just our whole thought process. So thank you so much for recognizing that. And you mentioned how musicians have a higher incidence of mood disorders. We actually had Johan Svanberg from Record Union from Sweden on the podcast, and he talked about the 73% study, which showed that 73% of independent musicians have experienced a mood disorder sometime during their life. And there is definitely recovery, and oftentimes addiction is tied to mood disorders. And I'm sure that's something that you come across also with the people that you interact with as far as getting financial assistance.
Absolutely. And addiction is pretty pervasive in our industry. I was thinking about that when you were talking about that experience that artists have and that the audience has. And it changes the way you feel, in much the way using a drug or a drink would as well. And it's a shared experience. You walk into a show and you're walking in with maybe, I don't know, 5,000, 10,000, even a couple hundred people, and you all have something in common. You all like this band and you all are about to have this experience together, and it's exciting. And you have a bond with these people, and then you have this amazing energy transfer, and it changes the way you feel, and it's a rush, and that can be addictive, right? I speak just as a layperson, but I have a keen understanding of this dynamic, that in the quest to change the way you feel, and it certainly can affect mental health in a lot of ways. And that trickle down effect that you mentioned, it can be all pervasive and very powerful.
One thing, when I talk to some of the musicians and artists that come on the Check Your Head podcast, they oftentimes want to do something to support mental health, as well as being outspoken with their own story. And one thing they've been interested in is this Atabuck program that you have at Sweet Relief. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? And if an artist wants to get involved, what can they do? And
sure. Artists are definitely our biggest supporters here at Sweet Relief. And the Atabuck program is a great tool that we have been using for many, many years. The most straightforward way to implement it is you just add a buck to the price of your ticket. You're going out on tour. You work with your agent, who would put it in the contract with the promoters. And if you were going to charge $15 a ticket, you charge $16, and a dollar would go to Sweet Relief. It can also be applied to if you have a limited edition vinyl release, for example, and you're going to sell it for $22, you would sell it for $23, and a dollar would go to Sweet Relief. You could do it on a merch item. And you could say, hey, for this week, this t-shirt, we're going to donate a dollar every time we sell a t-shirt. So it can be applied in any kind of a way. And we're always open. The great thing about the Atabuck on a tour is that then each show becomes a benefit show. So that's a little bit more of a story. So it becomes a nice promotional tool, a little something extra to talk about with the fans and maybe the promoters and even the venues like to talk about them. Like, hey, tonight's not just your typical Imagine Dragons show, it's also a Sweet Relief benefit show.
Yeah, I think there's definitely pride there, not only supporting Sweet Relief, but of course supporting other musicians. And the other really good thing about it is that I know we've worked together on a few Atabuck programs, is the promotion behind it. Because I know Sweet Relief has been, as well as the Check Your Head podcast, has been really good about promoting those shows and saying thank you to those artists. So sometimes local bands or bands that may want a little extra promotion, it kind of does help. The Satellite City show that we had, they expected a max of 300 people and they got 337. So they were really excited about that. I know. And that was the first live show that I've been to in a long time. And it was such a wonderful feeling. I mean, we were indoors with masks on, but there was no difference in the amount of energy that we felt from the band and just the excitement of being out and listening to live music again.
Yeah, that's so cool. We are always trying to be a good partner. We do not say no. If it's a small band that might only sell a couple hundred, we will never say no to someone who wants to help us.
Well, you know, I saw the list of all the supporters on the website, and it's like everybody under the sun, as far as a musician goes, seems to be on that list. You got the Foo Fighters, you got Yoko Ono, you got Ozzy Osbourne, Justin Timberlake. I mean, the list goes on. But there's also like comedian Nick Kroll is on there and actress Molly Ringwald. So it really is for anybody who wants to support musicians.
For sure. There's a lot of crossover, actually. I would venture to guess that we might have the most extensive list of musician supporters of any charity in the world.
I would bet on that, too. So anything else you would like to say, Eric, about Sweet Relief Musicians Fund?
Go to our website. Check it out. Email us. Reach out to us on any of our social media platforms. You're eligible for help if you make your living in the music industry. We do have pretty extensive waiting list right now for funds, but we also have a very extensive resource page on our website with lots of different categories and lots of different ways for you to get assistance. So if you're in the music industry and you're in trouble, please reach out to us and we'll make sure you get some help.
A big thank you to our musical guest, Chase Bryant, and our expert, Eric Steinberg of Sweet Relief Musicians Fund. For more information on Chase Bryant and to purchase his new album, Upbringing, visit chasebryant.com and follow Chase Bryant on his socials at Chase Bryant Music, at I Am Chase Bryant, and at Chase Bryant. Stay tuned to hear a clip of Chase Bryant's single Upbringing at the end of our episode. For more information on Sweet Relief Musicians Fund, visit sweetrelief.org and follow Sweet Relief on their socials at Sweet Relief Musicians Fund and at Sweet Relief. And be sure to sign up for Sweet Relief's weekly newsletter called The Band-Aid Report. If you'd like to participate in Sweet Relief and the Checkerhead Podcast's Atabuck program for mental health, email us at checkerheadpodcast@gmail.com or info@sweetrelief.org. So until next time, be brave, ask for help, and be persistent in finding the mental health that you need.
Changing who I am, 'cause I've always been this way. Like me, hate me, love me, leave me, it's in my DNA. It's in the water down here.
Check Your Head Podcast is kindly supported and partnered with Sweet Relief Musicians Fund, DBSA San Gabriel Valley, Earshot Media, and Lemon Tree Studios in Los Angeles. Visit checkyourheadpodcast.com, where we have over 100 solutions for mental health. Be our friends on social media at Check Your Head Podcast. Watch us on YouTube and support us with a kind donation on checkyourheadpodcast.com. Check Your Head Podcast is sponsored by a 501c3 nonprofit, with all donations being tax deductible. Thank you for your support, and thank you for listening.